pickup and SUV fans. Tim Estrella here, the host of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. Welcome to another edition of our fabulous podcast with the fabulous Joe Sinello.
Good afternoon.
All right. So we got through that awkward phase. Sorry, we have some technical issues going on. It snowed last night here, so there's just a lot going on. It's just the way it is. All right, so we're going to hop right in this podcast. We have lots to talk about, and I want to get right into one of the coolest things to talk about was the new Jeep. I'm calling it Wrangler Scrambler, but I guess it's going to be called the Jeep Scrambler. It's the pickup. It's the new Jeep Wrangler pickup. Ugh. It's a lot of words to describe a Wrangler with a bed, which is basically what it is. There's a new article on the website called What to Expect. There's also some new photos, and the photos were done, the renditions of what the truck would maybe look like when it comes to market. It was done by JeepScramblerForum.com. Some crafty guys over there with Photoshop skills, med skills with a Z, went after it, and they created these images of the Jeep Scrambler pickup. I guess I got to tell you what, it's pretty badass. honestly, I think the renderings are pretty close. I mean, you know, they essentially just took a Wrangler and put a bed on it, and because the Wranglers had an aftermarket kit for a long time about putting a pickup bed on it, you've been able to buy it aftermarket. I don't think that it's going to be a big surprise what it's going to look like. I theorize the interior is going to be the same as Jeep Wrangler. I just see them bringing it over. To me, it's just going to have a longer frame. It's going to maybe have some different, a little bit different styling exterior, not very much, maybe headlights and things. And it'll have the bed. And I think capability-wise, it's still going to have all the off-road capability because it's a Jeep, and that's what they do. And so I think it's an exciting truck. I think with the off-road capability, though, it's probably going to be more expensive than your entry-level midsize truck. Right. In my mind, I have pricing between 35, maybe early 30s to 45,000 is kind of my guess on what the pricing will be. I do think you will be able to get it with a EcoDiesel eventually. It will probably have the question on the powertrain is going to be whether they use the V6 that's in the Wrangler currently, or they bring down the eTorque V6 out of the Ram 1500. Which right. I could see them bringing that down because you need more horsepower and towing with a bed like that. And so I think it's interesting. I think it'd be really cool to get a Jeep Scrambler EcoDiesel Rubicon package. Yeah. Jill's like, hey, wait a minute. I know there's some dirt around here in Chicago. That may be some fun.
There is no dirt in Chicago, but maybe a couple of concrete obstacles to climb over.
Right? We call those small little cars. All right. So climbing over the Miatas. So I don't know. I think it's exciting. I think it's cool. I guess the one question I think I'm going to have, and this is, you know, for you and for everybody, it's going to be, is the new Scrambler going to be considered a midsize competitor to, say, the Frontier or the Colorado, the Tacoma? Or is it going to be so different that it's going to be kind of be in a category of its own?
You know, I mean, I think that's an interesting question because Jeep has done that before, and that's kind of the position that they were in when they created the Renegade. And, you know, I remember on the media drive for that, they were putting it up against things like the Kia Soul and the Nissan Juke. And I was just like, I don't think that's a competitor to this, but okay. you know, maybe the versions that didn't have all-wheel drive and weren't, you know, Trackhawk or Trailhawk, you know, versions. So, you know, I think initially maybe it would be, you know, Scrambler party of one. But I don't know. I think that's an I think it's an interesting thought. I think some versions would probably compete with the likes of the Frontier, but then other versions would be like the you know, the party of one. So it's interesting. So do you think they're going to launch this in LA then?
My theory is, sorry, I was looking for something. My theory is LA, and I say California for a couple reasons. I guess I have three main reasons for this. Number one, dealers have already been told and shown the new pickup. that came out a few weeks ago that the dealers had, that they've seen it. Number two, LA's next major show. Number three is the California market is typically one of the hottest off-road markets in the country, with the desert surrounding San Diego or West San Diego with the Glamis and places you can drive to around that area. So I think it makes a lot of sense to unveil it in LA. The question I have is if you do LA, which timing seems like it fits, or do you hold it until Detroit? Detroit typically is a bigger show. Jeep still has a big name in Michigan. Mm-hmm. It's your home show. In a way, for an Italian company, it's your home show. And so I think I could see it being in Detroit as well. I would love to see LA. I would actually thought they were doing something at the Easter Jeep Safari last weekend that we had over Easter, because it's such a Jeep show there. I could see them doing it as a one-off, like a YouTube one-off fan kind of show too. I don't think they need to wait for a show anymore. I guess it kind of comes down to your theory on auto shows, and you don't always need unveils on auto shows. I could see LA though, because this would give that LA show a lot of punch, and I think a lot of people would cover it. A lot of people would talk about this at the show. They would get a lot of discussions on it.
Well, so here's an interesting what if for you. Chrysler does a What's New program every summer. And so my what if would be, what if they decided to launch it at the What's New program? And they did it this summer, you know, because if the dealers have already seen photos, that to me says that it's probably a little bit closer than, you know, 9 months away. And so I don't know. What if they did it at the What's New?
Yeah.
Because you're right. I don't know that they need to do it at an auto show anymore.
I don't think they do. I mean, so they launched the Wrangler. So the Wrangler's out, and the Wrangler's basically the big bread and butter, right? The Scrambler pickup's going to be, you know, and a best case scenario, probably 25% of total Jeep Wrangler sales. I mean, that's a really high mark. I don't think it's going to be that high. Because I think a lot of Jeep Wrangler fans are going to have the big question with the Scrambler is going to be the breakover angles and the entry-exit angles. And that's because you have a longer wheelbase. And so it's not going to be quite as off-road capable as a Wrangler just because it's longer. It's just physics, you know. And so I don't know that many Wrangler customers would want the Scrambler, I mean, to that scale. And honestly, from an engineering standpoint, they extended the wheelbase, extended the frame, threw a bed on it. Right? I mean, there's not much they had to do as far as re-engineering it. You know, some ride quality, things like that. But I could see What's New. I could see it coming out. It'd be great for the summertime. But I don't know. I feel like this is a vehicle that is ready to come to market. And it's literally the PR marketing team sitting around going, okay, when do you want, you know, they probably have a big calendar and they're just kind of marking stuff off. And like, okay, well, when should we launch it? Should we launch it here? Should we launch it there? And, you know, I think it'll be out before you know it. But like you said, LA is November. That's, you know, seven months.
Yeah, it's a ways away. And I think that if Jeep wants to beat Ranger to the market, What's New kind of makes sense. Because what Ranger isn't necessarily due out until November, right?
Yeah, so I was just talking to a friend of the show, Mr. Chad Kirshner, on this. And we're discussing Ranger. And he said it was quarter four.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is interesting. I think that is way too slow. I think they need to speed that up.
Yeah.
But so, and maybe this is a good segue to talk about Ford, because we're kind of heading that way. We also have renderings of Autoblog did these renderings, and it's the Bronco. Well, and the Bronco is a big news thing too, right? So the Bronco and Ranger. But I think what's interesting, and you bring this up with the Ranger, is that, yeah, we're talking about Ranger, and we're talking about kind of this excitement of Ranger, but all of the excitement lately has been Bronco, 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 Bronco. I mean, website traffic-wise, Bronco's blowing up. I mean, and Ford just had an event a couple weeks ago where they're showing the new stuff at coming out next couple years, and it was Bronco. People just they're loving this idea of Bronco. And so Autoblog did this, some of these photos, and they're trying to compete with Jeep. Again, it's the Jeep and Ford are kind of going after it here. And they call it the Baby Bronco, which is probably not accurate. It's just a smaller version. We're not doing the O.J. Simpson Bronco. Get over it. That's done. Go to a junkyard. Buy one. Build it yourself. So the Bronco, and I'll have a link to it on Facebook, and we'll share it elsewhere. I think it's ugly as hell. So I'm just going to share it like that. The renderings, and honestly, they're probably pretty accurate because these days in design world, things aren't really changing that much. I mean, so you can take kind of some similar products and put them together. You can take a little front end of the Escape and make a little bit longer wheel and change it up. I mean, you can make things happen. But I know Jill, I think Jill has a different opinion than I do on this baby Bronco.
I actually like it. And so let's be clear here. This is not something Ford has released. These are not Ford images of what the Bronco will look like. This is Autoblog saying this is what we think it's going to look like. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, let's be clear about that first.
Right.
And the other thing is I want to point out, if anybody from Autoblog is listening, I apologize for pointing this out, but this like is a glaring thing that is speaking to me at just this moment. The very first sentence in the first line of the article, apparently the Bronco is going to be very salty.
I know, I saw that too.
All right. Because they are brining the Bronco.
Right. So there's
brining the Bronco.
There's a typo. It needs a G. But sorry, yeah, it is kind of funny. I noticed
bad
that
me.
Too.
I do typos all the time. So sorry, Autoblog. it's going to be very salty. I like it. I think it looks cool. It does definitely remind me of the Renegade, especially from like the front and back views of what they've done. But I don't know. I think it's cute. It's
yeah,
maybe it's cute.
It is, and maybe that's my problem with it. It's cute. I don't know. You know, I think there's some interesting things at play here. So, Ford, as we've talked elsewhere in the podcast, different places, they've really had some challenges with their business. You know, they do F-150 really well. They do Mustang really well. They haven't really done anything else really well. And so the Bronco would be a really good shot in the arm for them. I think it's interesting, their new Expedition, the new big Tahoe competitor, took off. Sales were like skyrocketing. And Ford was kind of talking about how really impressed at how much sales are going. I kind of felt like they were caught with their pants down. Like they really didn't understand what they had. Like they're like, oh my gosh, it's selling like crazy, like hotcakes. I'm like, Yeah, that's the way the market's been for like last 2-3 years. Like, how did you not expect that? the Tahoe, Yukon, and Escalade have all had increased sales over the years. I mean, the last 3 or 4 years, their sales are up year over year. It's like, how did you not expect that was going to take off? I just was blown away by their response on social media on that. And I was like, yeah, this is going to take off. So if you build a Bronco, and I'm sure they're sitting in the office going, wow, the Bronco is getting a lot of people asking questions about it. Yeah. I mean, it's an iconic name. It's like not having a Mustang for 10 years. It's like, I don't understand why there was so, the response to this is just so crazy. And so I think that you have this going on. You have Ford in this really interesting transition period where there was a report that came out the other day from USA Today that said they were going to kill they're talking about killing the Taurus.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said that they'd probably just keep the Mustang and the Focus. And then somebody else said, just kill it all. Just keep the Mustang, get rid of the Fiesta, get rid of the Focus, get rid of the Taurus, and just build SUVs and crossovers and trucks because, you know, that's what you want. And that's what the market's asking for. And I thought that was a very interesting article because I thought, you know, Ford, yeah, I mean, they do really well. I think I know one friend that has a Focus. And another friend's got a Fiesta, but a lot of people I know drive their trucks, or they'll drive, you know, Explorer. That to me, the Explorer does not get the play that it could. I mean, it's a great vehicle.
Well, the problem with the sedan line, and granted, this is not a pickup truck and car talk .com, but what I want to say about their sedan lineup is it's tired and it's old. And so people aren't buying them and people don't want them because they haven't been refreshed for a while. They're not sexy. They're not interesting. It's kind of like Chevrolet's sedan lineup. I mean, like, snooze.
Right.
And so, you know, of course they're not going to buy it. You know, I'd much rather buy a Mazda or a Hyundai or a Kia because they're actually doing cool things with their sedans. So, I mean, outside of, you know, the SUVs and truck talk, you know, that would be my 2 cents on the sedans from Ford. I don't think they need to do away with their entire sedan lineup, but I think they need to do one or two things really well and then focus on trucks and SUVs.
And they got quick segue. They got to work on their reliability.
They got to work on the transmissions, right?
Yes, that big recall transmissions, 300 and some thousand Expeditions and Fords that you put it in park, you take your keys out, and it actually rolls away. That's not a good thing.
That would be a problem.
So I had that. I want to get that out of the way because look for the recall. We'll have it on the site pretty soon. But I want to ask you specifically something else along the lines of sedans and SUVs. Is that, and I shared this in a private group, and I still find it fascinating. Nissan, when they unveiled the Altima is their midsize sedan, whatever. One of their marketing guys said that they did some focus groups, and they found that their aging baby boomers found sedans were easier to get in and out of than CUVs and SUVs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was blown away by that because I had a Mazda 6 at the time, and my wife and I were trying to get in and out of it, and we're in our 40s, and we were both cussing because we kept hitting our heads and trying to get the doors. It just was very aggravating. And I thought that was interesting because for years we've heard the opposite. We've heard that the CUVs, the reason the CUVs exist is they're about even with people's height, and for the hip height, you can just move in and out. But you have obviously a different stature than I do. I mean, what are your thoughts?
So this is an interesting conversation that I'm actually having with my parents right now. And my mother just had a hip replacement, two actually, on the same side. So she had a failed hip replacement and then they had to redo it within a month. And, she owns a Toyota Venza, which has a very car-like stance. And she has been able to get in and out of that vehicle very easily. She loves it. And you know, with the hand grip, and she can like kind of maneuver her way over and pull herself into the vehicle. But if you get anything any larger than that, I'm going to say the baby boomers can't get in and out of it. I had a minivan over Christmas because I thought that would be really easy for my mom to get in and out of. This was after her first hip replacement. And so I got a minivan. I figured it would be really easy to get her in and out of it. And she couldn't get into it. My brother-in-law literally had to pick her up and lift her into the vehicle because it was just like an inch, maybe an inch or 2 inches taller than what her Venza was. And she couldn't get in and out of it. And so I can totally see where they're saying, because you've got this population that has hip replacements, that has knee replacements, that has issues with steps, and has issues with maybe even upper body strength to pull themselves into the vehicle. And so I can see where either a small CUV, which by the way, the small CUV segment is, you know, exploding. And so something like that, or a sedan, is certainly going to be more attractive. Now, the problem that you run into, and the problem that I've discussed with my parents frequently, is the small CUVs that are coming out don't have any cargo volume. So, you know, if my parents are going to the airport to pick us up, in, you know, say maybe they're picking two of us up that have bags, like the bags aren't fitting in the trunk. You know, and so that's why she loves the Venza, is because it fits like three or four roller boards in addition to fitting five passengers comfortably. And she's like, so what else is coming out that looks like that? And I'm like, probably nothing. Yeah. They're kind of either going bigger or smaller. They're not really hitting that sweet spot. So I think there's a missed opportunity here for automakers. And I mean, certainly they've realized that baby boomers have problems getting in and out of the taller vehicles. So they're looking more towards sedans. But as you mentioned, you know, as people getting in and out of the sedans, if you're taller, if you're heavier, you know, it's really not that easy. For a long time, that is why something like the Kia Soul or the, you know, the ugly Nissan Cube or the Scion XB, that's why those vehicles were doing super duper well in the target market that they weren't targeting. They thought it would be a you know, a Gen Y millennial kind of vehicle, but the baby boomers were buying them because they sat up a little bit higher, but not too high. And they were really easy to get in and out of because they had a lot of headroom for them to not have to like duck and hunch and, you know, scoot themselves in. And so it's an interesting conundrum. You know, certainly the sedan height is preferable to somebody who has aging joints. But if you have the A-pillar that comes too far forward, or, you know, the there isn't enough headroom to get in and out, you know, that's going to be a problem. You know, you eliminate one problem to create another one. And, you know, interestingly, so I was just on the Hyundai Kona launch in Kona, and I did a little segment, a video segment. I mean, I need to get my hands on the video because I wasn't actually recording it, but I did a video segment with a couple of guys, one of which was two feet taller than me, basically, and then the other was probably about 200 pounds heavier than me. And so, you know, I'm sitting in the passenger seat and I'm like watching these guys get in and out of the vehicle. And I'm like, okay, so how comfortable is this for you? And they both had to kind of like do this contortionist movement to get into the vehicle. But once they were sitting in the vehicle, they thought, okay, this is really comfortable. I can adjust the seat. I can adjust the steering wheel. So it's interesting. So once you're in the driving seat, it's good. But getting there, as you point out, isn't always good. So I don't know. There's an interesting thing going on here.
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion. So my in-laws just bought a minivan because they found they can get out of it pretty easily. But but your mom can't. So it's just different people. And I would also say that you're right about the Nissan Juke. The famous story is that Angela Lansbury, the writer, actually bought one because she can just slide in and out of it easily. And I find that the case in many vehicles I talk about. Entry-exit is a huge concern. And I love the work vans because the door opens up so wide, just hop in and out of them. It's perfect. So speaking of entry-exit, this week I have a 2018 Toyota Tundra 1794 Crew Max without side rails. So my 6-year-old cannot get in by himself. He literally cannot. So I have to throw them in there. And I've had some pauses getting in and out, some missteps, because they got rid of the grab handle above the A-pillar. So you have to grab the steering wheel, which I do not like at all, and haul myself into there. But it's interesting to me driving around a Tundra. So as people know, I drive a lot of trucks, and I love trucks. And I've driven Toyota products now for... 5 years probably, and I've driven every Tundra in those 5 years. I've owned a Tundra for a couple of years. I mean, so I'm pretty well aware of the Tundra, and it's interesting to get in and out of this thing and think, you know, things have come really far in trucks. We have a lot of cool technology, a lot of cool looks and such, and the Tundra is really just the honest truck. It doesn't have any of those features. It doesn't have the big style that the other ones have. It doesn't have the aluminum stuff here and there. It doesn't have all the bells and whistles. And so it's interesting to drive this around, and I just appreciate it that much more. And it really gives me a sense of what consumers are saying, what they're really complaining about, is that you can't really buy an honest truck anymore. I mean, you can, but then you start adding these features you really want. And Toyota has added smart features. So, like, this has the blind spot monitoring. It's got the rear cross-traffic alert. It's got the smart safety technology that you want. All for $54,892, but it doesn't have good fuel economy and doesn't have, you know, things. But so it's a fun drive. I love Toyotas for their honesty, their big burly truck, and really reliable. And that's all you need to know. I was thinking about doing a video, and I was like, if I do the video, it'll be over in like 20 seconds. Here's the deal. Done. I thought maybe I need to do something different, but yeah. So that's the experience I have as far as entry exit. It's been an interesting week. Hopping in and out. All right, so I know you have to hit it. Do you want to talk about the vehicle you said to be in? Where did I write that note down? Or do you?
We can catch it next week.
Okay. All right.
Coming soon, I will talk about the Alfa Romeo Stelvio and the Infiniti QX80.
Yeah, we will talk about that next week. Next week, I'm traveling for most of the week, and I'll have some exciting updates when I'm back. And we'll have Jill's updates. And we'll have just more stuff that isn't snowy. It's supposed to be 70 degrees next week.
Yeah, I saw 60 in Chicago by Friday. So,
So exciting. Well, thanks for joining us. Yeah. Make sure you follow us on social media and Pickup Truck and SUV Talk or Plus SUV Talk on all your social media outlets. Find us on the website, pickuptrucktalk.com. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Lots of fun stuff going on there. And we'll see you down the road. We'll be right back.